Welcome to Season 9, Episode 14 of the Ubuntu Podcast. In this episode, we're going to interview Barton George from the Sputnik Project. We'll also have some command line love and go over your epic feedback. I'm Martin, and joining me this week are Laura.
Hello.
Hello. And Alan.
Hello.
How is everyone?
Diggity boo.
Good.
Not bad.
I found myself saying tickety boo in the States last week, and as soon as I said it once, I felt I had to say it all the time.
Yeah. Did they think you lived in a cottage?
They did.
Next one to guy the Queen.
One guy thought I was Australian.
Oh, well, I get that all the time in America. Yeah.
So what have you been up to then, Martin?
Hip chat.
What's that then? Is this a cool new thing for the cool kids?
I don't think it's new, but it's very useful. So you've probably heard of Slack, and we've talked a little bit about Mattermost in the past, which is an open source alternative to Slack. And there's also Rocket Chat and Gitter. I think HipChat may have been the daddy of all of these, because it's been around for the longest. But it's from Atlassian that do Bitbucket and Confluence and Jira and all of that stuff.
Do they do all of that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, blimey.
Yeah. And it's their sort of developer chat platform, but has integrations with all the things imaginable. So I wanted to streamline my development process and developer communication considerably, because having to go to GitHub for this and Bitbucket for that and Launchpad for this and Debian for that and this IRC channel here and all the rest of it was becoming a bit of a drag. So I've set up a HipChat, and everything is all integrated in one place, although in about half a dozen rooms. And all the information you need is streamed and presented to you in one place, and everything is one click away, and it's brilliant. And I'm sure the other platforms do all of this stuff as well, but this is the one I chose to go with.
This sounds very much like the thing we mentioned last week, Dustin Kirkland's Hollywood thing. Like when you talk about it all streaming to you in lots of different windows.
Yeah, when somebody updates Trello, it comes in. When somebody commits to GitHub or closes an issue, that appears. You can chat in there. I've got IRC channels reflected in there. It does. It looks like an epic hacker experience. but it's really great. So
is it free software?
No. So I'm using the hosted platform, but because their pricing is, well, in fact, I don't have to pay at the moment because our team is small. But when we do get to a size where we have to pay, their costs are decent. But they do have a host-it-yourself version as well. So if you want an open source version, then I think the only game in town is Mattermost, and they've just had their 3.0 release.
And Rocket Chat.
Is that? Oh, yes, and Rocket Chat, that's right.
Which have just merged, actually, with GitLab, Mattermost.
Oh, right, okay.
Found
that. So I tried Mattermost out, and it's great, but I don't want to have to run another server and look after it and all the rest of it, so I went with a hosted platform.
Cool.
See, from the name, I just sort of see it as being like a guy in a leather jacket when he's chatting and sort of shooting from the hip and going, hey!
I see it more as like a Snapchat type thing. I think it's just photos.
The very fact that I'm using it should tell you that it's neither of those things.
Well, zing. Shall we get on with the show?
Yes.
So while I was at OSCON last week, I interviewed Barton George, and I did so in a very loud environment. So I'd like to apologise for any audio snafus during this interview. So I'm now going to hand over to me.
So I'm here at OSCON in Austin with Barton George from Dell. Hello, Barton. How are you?
Good day, Alan. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's a bit warm here, isn't it?
It's not too bad. I guess it depends on what you're used to. Maybe in, from your perspective. For us, this is, you know, sweater weather, but...
Awesome. So people will probably recognize your name from the Dell Sputnik blogs and your project updates. And Dell have been shipping machines with Linux for a long time. Can you tell us a little bit about how the Sputnik project evolved and how it began?
Yeah, I think that, originally the idea was for Mr. O'Grady, Stephen O'Grady of Redmonk, a boutique analyst firm. We brought him in just to chat about how we might do a better job of courting developers and high-tech firms. And he said, you know, it'd be a really neat idea is if you took an OS like Ubuntu and you put it on a Dell laptop, did all the drivers targeted at developers, I think that would really be a win, because there really isn't a large OEM like a Dell-sized person doing this. And we heard that, and I thought, yeah, great idea. It'll never happen at Dell. And so I put that on the shelf, my mental shelf. And what happened in the probably 3 months after that, there was an innovation fund that was started at Dell where they said, come bring your wacky ideas. If we like it, we'll give you the thumbs up. We'll give you 6 months and a little pot of money and see if you can prove out what you're doing. So that's how I got in there and I pitched this idea. And the difference is, and as you mentioned, we've been shipping Ubuntu on laptops and or Linux, other distros as well, and on the servers. But the thinking in with Dell is, okay, free OS, cheap hardware, put the two together, low price point. The idea here, the difference was, developers want a nice machine. Let's put it on a high-end machine. Let's take Ubuntu, put it on there, write the drivers, and it'll be a win-win. And so that was the thing that people didn't expect. It was sort of a mind shift for folks to know that, wow, people actually will get Ubuntu not because it's free, but because that's the OS they want to be developing on.
So when you first got the funding and agreement, you then had to go and find a device that you were going to ship. What drove that the decision of what device you would ship first?
Well, it was pretty obvious to us because, and just to back up a little, when the idea was originally proposed to us, we didn't have, let's say, the sexiest of systems. Serendipitously, what happened between the time when the idea was proposed and when the incubation fund started off was we came out with a super sexy XPS 13 Ultrabook. And so that was really a no-brainer as far as what we wanted. So different than what we have had before, which is the idea, let's put a free operating system on a low-end system. We can get a low price point and people will snap them up because it's super cheap. We said, let's take Ubuntu, put it on a high-end system, and people will buy it not because Ubuntu is free, but because that's actually the OS they want to be using. So back to your question, that was a no-brainer, the XPS 13. What I also want to do originally was we were going to do a Beauty and the Beast lined up. So the XPS 13 would be the Beauty, and we had these big precision workstations. That was going to be the Beast. But luckily, cooler heads prevailed and taught me out of the doing both of them to begin with. Because I think one of the biggest lessons learned from this whole project for me is really key to start small. If you start off with this idea of having multiple configs of each one, two different systems, blah, 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 you just spread too thin. And particularly given the skunkworks nature of this, you really need to focus. So we went and we just started with one config of the XPS 13.
And there was a lot of work required to get Linux working on these machines because they're normal Windows SKUs, so they would normally ship with Windows. So what kind of work was required, device driver stuff was required to get those things working?
So we had a various different, so we had a bunch of drivers we were writing, the most onerous being the one for the touchpad at the time. So when we announced this program, we carefully positioned it as, hey, this is just a program. We don't know if it'll ever be a product, but we would love to get your feedback. If it were to be a product, what would you like to see? So when we announced it, we also had an ISO that people could download with some of the initial drivers. But what we said too was, hey, we haven't had a chance yet to fix the touchpad driver. We're going to work with Cypress, Canonical, and ourselves to get that going. So luckily, during the process, we finally got that going. And we upstreamed it to the 2.16 kernel, if I have it correctly, because that's one of the things. No, it wouldn't be 2.2, it would be 3.16. This shows my age. But anyway, one of the ideas is let's make this available for the community. Let's just don't make it for Dell. And just a little sidestep here, one of the big ideas here is, yeah, we're shipping it with Ubuntu, but we would love other people, the community, to take it and take it beyond that. So if you want to run Arch or Mint or Fedora, go for it. And so, once again, a little bit of a sidestep here. One of the other things I've been most happy with in this program, or happiest, has been the forum that has developed on Dell Tech Center. And we have people ask answering each other's questions, as you'd want in a true forum, in a true community. Just didn't know if that would ever be possible on a Delft property. So it's not just, while they do ask us questions, hey, what about this, what about that? Even more importantly is the folks say, hey, I'm running it on Arch, I'm having problems with this, with the brightness, who's come across this? So that's basically one of the key things.
And the people externally, you know, they know their stuff, they're familiar with Linux, they know what to do, and they can help each other on a forum. What about internally changing, for example, the website so that it shows, you know, a Linux SKU rather than a Windows SKU and doesn't offer to give you Norton antivirus with a Linux product? And, you know, was there a lot of challenging work internally in Dell for that?
And there still is. I wish I could say it all works like a dream. It's definitely gotten much easier. But just as you said, right, it'll say McAfee is available here.
Right.
Adobe comes with this. And so we do need to scrub it manually. But I have been very impressed with the amount of folks who are willing to work with us. And it's grown over the years. It's now in, we've had it 3 years out and available in the market, fifth generation for the XPS 13. And it gets easier and easier. But yes, those are some of the things we need to work with to make sure that it does come out. And every so often, you will have issues like that. One of the things that I was so excited about was when we first came out, let's see if I can explain this for people to understand, it offered in different channels. And so for different customer bases. So while it was cheaper than Windows in each channel, when you compared the two channels across the way, it looked like the Ubuntu version was more expensive than the Windows. So rather than trying to explain this to folks, because they would just say, I don't care, it's more expensive, we actually worked with the pricing people, and within 3 hours of getting bombarded on Twitter, we were actually able to drop the price $100, which I would, if you'd asked me if we could move that fast, I would have said no. And it was, so that was, I was very happy with that, the folks working like that to do that.
Awesome. One of the other questions that we get a lot is about when a new Sputnik comes out and we see your promotional blog and we see the technical specs of the device and it's a very desirable device, people want to buy it straight away in every country. You know, there's Linux users around the world. What are the limitations on you being able to just say, yep, it goes live everywhere, you know, on day one? And you tend to roll out in phases. Can you explain that a little?
Yeah, I think in the two main... So, with the Precision line, it is available worldwide because that's just their model of distribution. For the XPS 13, which we've been offering longer, it's Europe and the U.S. And Canada, I should say. And as an aside, the Europe outsells the States. So,
wow.
Yeah, no, it's actually, I don't know if it's 2-1, but it's a pretty sizable chunk. And there has been, in the five generations, there is one time that we got Europe out ahead of the States. And it just happens to be with sort of who has more of their act together and depending on what else they may have going on at the time. So the goal is we would love A, to launch Europe and the US at the same time. B, we would also like to launch at the same time as Windows. That would be our nirvana. But oftentimes the drivers take more time to write. And so we are not ready at day one with the same time as the Windows.
On the subject of drivers, do you receive the early, you know, iterations of the hardware the same time as the Windows team does? Or do you get it after it's already been a Windows machine?
No, we do get it ahead of time, but we start working on it. And it's just sometimes it's a longer process because it's not just us and Canonical, for example, it's us Canonical and Intel or us Canonical and Cypress. And so it's getting this triumvirate to work together. So that's sort of causes the time, I should say.
And you said it's expanding to other devices as well, and there's multiple SKUs available. Have you got enough? You say that in Europe we get like decent sales of the devices. Is it bubbling up within the management at Dell that it's, you know, this is worth continuing to do? I mean, the fact that you've got five generations out of it means it must be worth doing. But, you know, is it still worth, you know, pushing? Because a lot of the time people feel like Linux is such a niche that there's no way you could get enough sales to justify the project existence.
Right. Well, although we didn't set out to make money on, I shouldn't say make money, that wasn't our primary goal.
primary goal was strategic because of the influence developers hold in the whole IT industry to curry favor with them. We actually have taken that $40,000 and turned it into tens of millions of dollars. So not bad. as they say, and marketing budget is my blog. So, in fact, that was the, I remember in Europe, the question came, someone said, well, all right, do we want to offer it again? And then one of the higher level folks said, basically what I just said is, sales was X and all the marketing is Barton's blog. Why would we not offer it again? So that's been, that's helped. And as in general, it's, as we've gained traction, people have just become accepting of it and just saying, this is part of our lineup, as opposed to early on, it seemed like, oh my gosh, every time we had to re-justify, or somebody would come out of the blue in a certain part of the organization who hadn't heard of it and saying, you know, why are we diverting valuable resources? And that makes sense too. When you're trying to put your own product out and you see this other one that may be taking resources from you, you're wondering why that is. And so that's a constant thing, no matter what you're doing within a large organization, is fighting for resources for your product.
Right. And when you say resources, you're talking about, you know, the people within your team who work on drivers and so on, and,
exactly,
and collateral, obviously not a huge marketing budget.
Right.
But what do the guys in your team do other than write? Is that like their main priority and interfacing with the community and so on?
Yeah, exactly. We've got, we have a Linux engineering team that focuses more on the mass development, sorry, the lower end systems for the mass market. That being said, Sputnik is the sexiest thing we have, so this is what they actually prefer to work on. And so we get a lot of mind share with them. And a lot of this is basically, like you said, drivers and any kind of issues that come up. I think one of the things that I enjoy most about it, I think I've talked about all these things I enjoy most, a lot of mostest in here, is the constant amount of customer contact via the blog, via the forum, via Twitter, is you're talking to customers every day, because somebody will ping you, and like today someone asked me about when's it going to be available in Australia, and that is, I'll go on, for all our Australian fans, I'll say that is really a sore subject. We do want to offer it in Australia, but each geography can make that decision themselves.
So they choose the SKUs that are available in their region.
Exactly. Right. And unfortunately, it comes back to this resource, right? If you're only allowed, and we do have a finite number of SKUs you can offer in a region, if you've got X number, are you going to bump something else for this? And it just becomes, we're going to sell this
numbers
much.
Game,
yeah,
really
exactly.
Is.
We're selling more with this. And so that's the way it goes.
So you've come out with really sexy hardware. The most recent one we've got over on the Ubuntu stand, and I see you've got one on the Dell stand here at OSCON. They're lovely devices with the very thin bezel. What does the future hold for the Sputnik program? Is it more beauties, more beasts, more something in between?
Well, we follow what we launch in the Windows area. So we at Dell stay on touch of the top of the latest development. So it's a USB-C, right? So that's something we've got running in the latest one. And then, as I said, we've really catapulted ahead in the looks department and the mobility department, whereas we were sort of a, I don't want to say utilitarian, but more of an economical offering. With the latest versions of the XPS 13, we really have come out ahead in a lot of ways. So one of the things that, and you alluded to this, the infinity display, as we call it, it's the smallest, what you call it, frame around the actual screen. So what it allows us to do is offer the smallest 13-inch laptop around. So when you're looking for mobility, that really helps. So as I said, we've gone from a lot of our stuff being more, as I say, value focused, to actually having really cool, leading the pack type of hardware.
And when your customers give you feedback on the forums, and there's things that you can fix, like drivers, touchpad drivers, if something's skittish, you can work on that. Do you pass on feedback about Ubuntu itself to Canonical? How is that relationship managed between Dell and Canonical?
Yeah, well, yes, it is. There's formal ways and there's informal ways. So Mr. Shuttleworth texted me the other day, and he's actually using the XPS 15, which is very similar to the precision line we have. And he's come across a few things. And so basically there, he's put us in touch with someone on the Canonical side. We put together our side and are working on it. Now, that's not the usual way that these
happen. It's quite handy when the boss has one, isn't it?
Exactly, because then he gets the Canonical side motivated to get things done. So that's very cool. But yes, in general, we have a program where we work with Canonical to fix things.
So what does the future hold? Where would you see Sputnik in a few years' time? Do you think it's tablets? Do you think it's phones? Or do you think it's just continuing making the sexiest laptops you can available to a wide audience of Linux users?
Well, with Sputnik, we're focused on primarily the laptops, whereas in our IoT gateway, we're using Snappy. So it's not the only place we're using Ubuntu. We also offer it on the servers. So one of the things I'd like to see is a tighter connection with, say, the cloud. And so that was actually something from the very beginning that we had tried to do, is create what we called a cloud launcher. And actually, I'll use the word serendipitously again, but right before I pitched this to the incubation fund, Mark Shuttleworth happened to be at Dell. We got together, and he said, oh, I love the idea of an Ubuntu laptop, but it gets really interesting if we connect it to the cloud. And so back then we were talking about Lexi and microclouds, and we tried to do that, and it was harder than we thought. So another one we sort of put on the back burner, and then this technology Docker came along. You may have heard of it.
Yeah.
And really did, here's that serendipitously, it came along and did what we were trying to do in a very easy, very elegant way. And so now, having a natively running Linux on your laptop is a great environment for Docker. And there actually is a bunch of folks at Docker who use the XPS 13. So that I would look to do that. One of the other things we're looking to do is put PCF Dev on our laptop. What is PCF Dev, you ask?
Yes, exactly. I would.
It's the Private Cloud Foundry Developer Edition, where it's a one VM version of Cloud Foundry. And so those types of things we want to make it more compatible with. So I don't think we will pre-bundle it with that, because that is that really gets into tricky factory integration stuff. But making it as easy as possible, that if you do want to load that you can do it. And so I think greater connections beyond just a standalone laptop. Whereas there's going to be a lot of people who only want it as a standalone laptop, and that's great. But the more that we can offer it as a solution, the better off for making it solution accessible.
Excellent. I look forward to it. Well, thanks very much for taking the time to talk to me, Barton, and good luck with future endeavors with Sputnik.
I appreciate it, Alan. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
And now it's time for command line love. Which doesn't sound very good when I've got a bad throat.
Sorry about that. You should make it better.
Yeah. So this week's command line love, I can't remember exactly where I got it from. I think it was a recommended YouTube video that I watched when I was watching some geek thing. I watched this other thing. And I think the channel may have been called Node. It's like a tutorial channel. Anyway, the command line love is on GitHub, and it's called WayBackPack. And it's written in Python. And the purpose of WayBackPack is to go to the Wayback Machine, archive.org, where they have an archive. The Wayback Machine has an archive of many old websites. So all those blog posts you wrote many, many years ago on that old GeoCities site or wherever they were, may well be archived on the Wayback Machine. And typically when you look at the Wayback Machine, you go to archive.org and then you punch a URL in and then you navigate around. WayBackPack is a command line tool that can do that for you. And it will go to the Wayback Archive and get whatever website you tell it to get. And you give it a date range if you want to, and there's some other options as well. And it will just go and get every copy of that website in the date range that you specified.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That Wayback Machine is brilliant. I used it when I prepared my talk for DevRelCon, and I had to find all the old versions of IBM websites.
Nah.
And, Some of them didn't seem to be captured. I don't know if it was the way that they were implemented at the time, but yeah, I did spend a lot of time browsing through calendars.
Yes, it's quite handy because you can just give it a URL. If you know that there's a URL that has changed a lot over time and you want to get that URL and you know the rough dates, mm-hmm. you can give it a from and to, and it'll give you every occurrence of that page through that period of time. And so you end up with a separate directory for each date stamp, and then within that the website, and then within that there's your index.html or whatever. And you can just browse through it and open up each of the ones and pick out the content. You can dump it out as raw HTML as it would have looked on the original site, but the Wayback Machine actually modifies the page so that it references links internally within the Wayback Machine. Mm. If you want to, you can do either. You can either dump it out raw or dump it out as Wayback Machine does it. Mm. It's cool.
We love getting your feedback, so please send it to us. Even the pointlessly mean stuff makes us laugh. If it's short, tweet us on @UbuntuPodcast. If it's less short, but please no essays, email us on show@ubuntupodcast.org. If you'd like to discuss some of the things we talk about with other listeners, post on our shiny new subreddit at reddit.com/r/UbuntuPodcast. Or you can just leave a comment on the relevant show notes on our website, ubuntupodcast.org.
And now it's time for some of that there feedback.
Lots of it.
Lots of it. So Tor Gorson left a comment on our website, ubuntupodcast.org.
He says, I pre-ordered an M10 last month and I got it 2 days ago. Even though I had seen some reviews, I managed to be disappointed.
Oh,
when everyone are unhappy about the M10, it almost seems rude to join in and heap even more scorn on the hapless devs. But I trust Laura means it when she says even the pointlessly mean stuff makes us laugh. Oh gosh, here we go. So he says, so here are my reactions. Everything seems sluggish and unresponsive. I opened gedit and there's no virtual keyboard. Uh-huh. I connected a Bluetooth mouse and the tablet crashes and restarts. Ooh. I start up Deco and add my Gmail account. At some point, the program stops responding. Turns out an invisible modal confirmation window has popped up. I found it by swiping in from the right. Then the app doesn't manage to read the inbox. I give up and want to quit Deco, but can't. All these things will probably be fixed, but the worst thing in my mind is that I cannot apt-get install stuff. How can this be a replacement for a computer if we can't even install a scripting language and we can't compile it from source since there's no compiler? I guess it will only get better from here. Smiley face. Yes, thank you for your pointlessly mean feedback. No, I'm only
kidding. But optimistic.
Yes. Well, you kind of can apt. There are ways to do that. It's a different setup, but yeah, it is possible. There is actually a good article on Ask Ubuntu about the pros and cons of making your device read-write, because by default it's writable. It's read-only. Dobby, one of the developers, suggests how you can create a cheroot on the device. And so inside the cheroot, you could add all the compilers and all the other bits and bobs you want to. I appreciate that's only one solution, and it may not be the solution you're after, but that's the solution you're getting from me today.
Esteban left a comment on our website.
I bought the BQ M10 tablet. As Martin said, the hardware is good. I like that it has strong battery, but... .. The OS is lacking in so many ways. I tried using it as a desktop by attaching a mouse and keyboard and external drive, but it crashes almost all the time. I can browse the internet and I can view my Gmail. Any Android tablet can do that and much, much more. Although Linux podcast here in the States... Another Linux podcast here in the States... pointed to the Pyra computer. Here is a link. We'll include it in the show notes. It would be great if Martin could do some magic with Ubuntu Martin. This is the first time I've read this, sorry. And make this tablet more usable. Oh, goodness. Oh, and if you are at a party and want a conversation starter, you could mention, in Spanish, Marte means killed. You've spelt it wrong in Spanish. There's no apostrophe. People will either roll their eyes and walk away, or you will be the talk of the party. Well, thank you. Thank you for your feedback, Esteban. don't look to me to improve the Ubuntu Touch experience. There are plenty of developers far more experienced and capable than I that are working on that right now.
Thank you. So Charles left a comment on our website too.
He says, thanks for the honest discussion of the Ubuntu Touch stuff, although it of course begs the question of why Canonical are doing things they are unable to do well. Also, what is it with the split-up shows? It really feels silly and anachronistic in more than one way. Also, the show would sometimes benefit from taking some more time to actually discuss a topic in more depth, which might happen more easily without it. Yeah. We have lengthy discussions about how long the show should be. Much longer than the actual show is. And we settled on this for a number of reasons. Like, we wanted to have a show every week, but we don't want to get together every week. We wanted to have a decent size that we could slot an interview in, but we didn't want to have to sit for a full hour to record one episode, and then if we're going to do one for the following week, sit for a full hour and do another episode. I'm sure there's some happy medium in between, and sometimes we could go for 5 or 10 minutes over, but we try and keep it as tight as we possibly can.
Yep. It's just is the show. Mm. And we look at changing it each year and decide what to change and what not to. Patrick Stack at Patrick Stuh on Twitter, and our Twitter account is, of course, at Ubuntu Podcast. He says,
bought the M10 BQ. Big issues are lack of app features. Is there a reader with a slider and non-functioning apps, G apps? Does he mean Google apps maybe, or just maybe apps? There is not, like not being able to open URLs on the App Store descriptions, which makes looking up apps a real pain.
I filed that bug 2 years ago about not being able to click links in the App Store. I'm going to chase that down because that annoys me as well.
You should give it a funky title.
Yes.
That'll
yes,
get yes. Attention.
Yes. Suggestions for good bug titles, again, send us your suggestions.
Yeah. Jalath Reedy emailed us at show@ubuntupodcast.org.
Hi gang, a recent update to the libnl package was causing systems to lose their network interfaces on 1404. I've had to do some driving to friends and relatives' houses to put things right. I've experienced a fair share of unbootable systems, text-only sessions, and broken networking after updates, and I'm wondering why Ubuntu / Canonical don't use automated testing for such critical packages. Where can a power user like myself get their voice heard and offer suggestions? I'd imagine a Jenkins build should be able to build a proposed update, reboot, and test for a ping response in that particular example. P.S. I'd like to echo a previous commenter. I really enjoy your show for both the Ubuntu content as well as the individuals presenting it. You always bring a smile to my face, even on difficult weeks. Thanks so much.
Aww.
Thank you, Jalath. So, yeah, we do test stuff. And also, if you are a power user and you want to get involved in testing stuff before it hits users, there is a system called SRU, Stable Release Update. So that update that you got on your system and your friends and relatives got will have gone through a week of stabilization and would have been tested by some people and validated that it fixed the issue, whatever bug that caused it to be changed in the first place. And there is a web page. If you look for Ubuntu SRU on Google, I'll find a link and put it in the show notes. And you can go through the list of pending updates, pending stable release updates. And it's a really good way to get involved because you just go through that list, look for a piece of software that you recognize, like Network Manager, and it lists all the bugs that that package fixes. Go and install that package, test that it does fix those bugs, and you can mark those bugs as being verification done, which means you've proved that whatever the bug was, you know, was fixed. And once you do that, that helps to move that down the chain to end users. And if it doesn't fix it, if it does cause a problem, network connectivity being a big one, then you can report that on the bug and say, no, this doesn't fix it, or there are further issues with this, you shouldn't land it, kind of thing. And that those kind of conversations are very useful to have. So, yes, it is something people can get involved in, and that would be a really great way to contribute. And thank you for your kind words.
Ian McKeon emailed us.
Great show. Really enjoyed the last episode. The chemistry between you all works well. Two quick points about desktops. One tip I have only recently discovered, which is brilliant. However, the mouse pointer over the
hover.
Hover. Oh, dear.
It's a critical part of that sentence.
Yeah, I know. Hover. Hover the mouse pointer over the volume icon in the system tray. Scroll up and down and the volume changes up or down. It's not necessary to open the volume control. There is even a pop-up which tells you that the what volume level you're at. This is just brilliant. It saves so much effort and confusion.
It's cool, isn't it?
Yeah, it's good stuff. And he goes on to say, I've updated from Lubuntu 15.10 to 16.04, and for the most part, everything works fine, except after the computer hibernates, sleeps, or the screensaver kicks in when you log back in, the mouse pointer has disappeared. It's active, but invisible. I have found no cure for it right now, but the workaround is to press Control F1 to get to switch TTYs, and then Control F7 to switch back to the desktop. Voila, everything is fine again. And I'm just passing on my find to anyone else tearing their hair out. I cannot claim the workaround is mine. Looking forward to the next show. Many thanks for making my drive to work a better place. Aww. Thank you for your feedback, Ian.
Mark, not that one, left a comment on our website.
Interesting comments regarding ZFS. I wonder if any of you have actually used it in anger. And three question marks. I've run it at work on a FreeNAS as our main storage server for a couple of years. ZFS is a good, fast, efficient, stable, and reliable file system, but it is very resource hungry. FreeNAS recommend 1 gig of ECC RAM for each terabyte of disk space and plenty of CPU, quality connectivity and interfacing, not £10 SATA cards, dual power supplies, and definitely a UPS. So our server has 30 terabytes of usable space on 24 drives, 32 gig of RAM, dual Xeon hex core CPUs. It's a monster that does a sterling job. But is it really necessary on Ubuntu? Unless it's also a monster up in your server rack. Why would you want a 100% server grade file system on a laptop or desktop? All it will do is consume all the resources of the machine.
I've used ZFS in anger. It's one of the things I do. And the reason why you want it in Ubuntu is because Ubuntu is an epic server distribution, and all of those requirements you've just listed, exactly. Vast storage arrays, up in the cloud, back-ending, web-scale deployments, that's what you want, because ZFS snapshots and ZFS replication are amazing.
There you go. David Apps emailed.
Thank you very much for such an interesting and entertaining podcast. I expect that you have plenty of ideas for future topics already, but please could you consider doing an item on accessibility from time to time? He's also given us some feedback on using some different desktop experiences and the accessibility wins and fails that exist in those. It's quite a long email. David, I hope you're listening. Because we don't need to make this podcast because somebody else has done it last week. There's a podcast called Going Linux. Last week they had episode 299. It's an hour and a half long and it's just about accessibility. They did another episode 2 years previous, which was just about accessibility. And on both those episodes, they on the earlier one from 2014, they had Jonathan Nadeau on. He's the president of the Accessible Computing Foundation in America. And on this last week's show, they have Kendall Clark on, who is a visually impaired Linux user and developer, and he works on Sonar GNU Linux. So a developer making a distribution specifically for blind and visually impaired users. If you listen to that episode, I think you'll find out an awful lot about the different Linux distributions and the tools that are available. And you might also learn I'm quite involved in the accessibility community. I've got your email address and I shall send you links to Kendall, Kyle Brouard and Jonathan Nadeau's social accounts so you can connect with them, because that was one of the things you asked us about, is getting in touch with other blind Linux users. And those three are the three main people driving accessibility in the Linux world at the moment.
Cool. And finally, Kev sent us a short email.
Why is your podcast so short? I nearly had an accident in the car when I had to start messing with my phone to flick onto the next podcast. Would it please be possible for Laura to perform a monologue or reading from a selected book at the end of the show, as she has a gorgeous accent? I feel padding the podcast to about 45 minutes would be a major contribution to road safety. I think we've done that this week, haven't we?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, crikey.
And we've got more of your feedback next time.
Oh, blimey. Oh, really? Oh, crikey.
And that's all for episode 14. We'll be back next week when we'll have more news, comment, and discussion.
And maybe Mark back.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. I think he should have a suntan or something, I imagine.
Yeah. Golly, that was a long one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm loving all this feedback. It's definitely making us more Ubuntu-y.
Yes, I agree. Even the pointlessly mean stuff.
Indeed.
All right. Well, I'll see you next week.
See you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.